It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. Baseball, America's pastime. The 20 years at the beginning of the 20th century became known in the baseball world as the dead ball era. Entire games were played with a single ball, and the emphasis was on defense and pitching. Jason Novak, an Oakland-based cartoonist, has put together a book of drawings and, well, let's call them microbiographies, highlighting the lives of the famous and not-so-famous players of the day. And the book is titled Baseball Epic, Famous and Forgotten Lives of the Dead Ball Era. He'll be joining us to talk about, well, what else? Baseball. So, are you a baseball history buff? What do you love about it? Who's your favorite player, or rather your favorite, maybe your favorite game from the past? Have you learned about the dead ball era? What stands out to you? Parents, do you teach your kids about America's pastime? And if so, why do you think it's important? And have you experienced games with your family? What about teachers? Do you find your students enjoy sports history? How do you use sports to teach larger lessons? Get a hold of us today and share your stories. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Ideas@WPR.org. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Jason, good morning. Welcome to the morning show.
Good morning. Thank you.
Your book, Baseball Epic, is about the life of people from the so-called dead ball era, which was in the early 1900s. What got you interested in this particular part of baseball history?
Well, probably the first spark, reading an anecdote about some of the players after there was a scandal in baseball in 1919. The World Series was rigged, and a number of players on the Chicago White Sox were implicated and ultimately ended up being banned from the game altogether. They never played again. And some of them wound up doing things like working in convenience stores. And I was kind of intrigued that someone who had that level of star status could fall to a place where they were sort of doing something that was fairly anonymous and were actually kind of trying to stay out of the limelight. From there, I just started reading more and more about that whole era, realizing that not just the disgraced players, but a lot of these players, after their careers were over, because it wasn't quite the high-earning sort of job that it is now, had to go back to whatever they were doing before, which in a lot of cases was blue-collar work.
Yeah, that's an important point. I think that baseball players weren't paid very much, and a lot of them had second jobs or came to the game already having money, didn't they?
That's right, yeah. So, I'd say, especially with the biographies that I have in the book, that seems to be the two main categories. It was either gentlemen players who came like from the Ivy Leagues, or players who came from what you might call industrial teams, like the local coal company would have a baseball team, or an auto manufacturer would have a baseball team. And at some point, they would be playing well enough that the major leagues would notice these guys, pull them in. But once their career was over, once they basically used up their bodies, it was back to the auto line.
Auto line, coal mine, whatever it was they were, doing. So with all of this as a context, then, what's so important about this era? Why should the average baseball fan pay attention to this? Why should they care about the dead ball era?
Maybe one of the things. Well, at least for me, I have a strange entry into baseball. I wasn't necessarily a big baseball fan before this book. My main interest has always been history, but to, like I said, with the anecdotes I started reading about just through happenstance, it generated an interest for me. This particular period in baseball history has a lot more variety and unpredictability than the game today. For example, because there wasn't the national broadcasting infrastructure set up, the kinds of things that could happen in any given stadium varied a lot. There were things that would happen that the rest of the country wouldn't be hearing about, and so these very unique cultures would start to grow up in individual cities. And, of course, at that time there were a lot more what you might call town ball clubs. where everyone would go see a game played by this. They weren't part of a league. They were just the local entertainment for the day. And all kinds of strange, quirky traditions would pop up. One thing that I think is fascinating is in early games, when a game was over, it was common for fans to just rush the field and completely surround the players. It's unfathomable to me now that ever happening, but back then that was sort of an expected moment at the end of games.
And these men were local celebrities. I mean, they were well known locally for their town team or whatever company they were playing for. But were there some players who had a national level of celebrity at all in those days?
Yeah, and I think probably it's the people that even if you don't know much about baseball, you've probably heard of, like, Ty Cobb, for example, or Babe Ruth, both of whom were playing during this period. And they were at the very top of the major leagues, so they had most of the attention. And at that point, yes, you could become a national star. But this book actually includes both of those players, but most of them were playing at a much lower level. They made it to the major leagues, most of them, but some of them had very short careers in the major leagues, but very long careers in baseball. So they might have been playing either in a minor league or in a company team, or they might have been doing what was called barnstorming, where they basically would just go from town to town playing ball games with whatever team would have them.
Jason Novak is an Oakland-based cartoonist. He is the author and illustrator of Baseball Epic, Famous and Forgotten Lives of the Dead Ball Era, a book of microbiographies of the men and women who shaped baseball. So are you a baseball history buff? What do you love about it? Who's your favorite player or maybe your favorite game from the past? Join us at 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. The pages of your book, Baseball Epic, include drawings and short descriptions about the life of people from the dead ball era. Why did you choose this particular format? You have a picture on the left and then a few sentences on the facing page.
I wanted to create sort of the experience of looking at baseball cards. So the typical format now for a baseball card, you've got the player on one side, and on the back it's usually a list of statistics. And very occasionally you'll get some biographical information, like the place they were born, or things like that. But I wanted to find a few biographical tidbits that might not ever make it on a baseball card. So it's a lot of the stuff focuses on their careers outside of actual playing.
Well, and the some of the information you include, it's not just their accomplishments or career highlights. You often include something about a fall from grace for a number of these players, or how they died. I noticed a number of them who died of accidental gunshots. What made you want to note some of the tribulations of these people?
Well, that era was a very rough one. There's a caveat with that. It seems like every age looks back on the past as being more primitive somehow. So I'm sure that players in the 1910s and 1920s probably thought that the generation before them was the really rowdy one. But it was definitely an age when people didn't have life expectancy was much shorter for a number of reasons.
And we'll pick that up in just a moment. We're talking baseball this morning with Jason Novak, author of Baseball Epic. Our conversation continues. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. Well, the 2019 Major League Baseball season has officially kicked off. We're celebrating by looking back at the game as it was played in the first two decades of the 20th century, the so-called dead ball era. Jason Novak is an Oakland-based cartoonist whose latest book is titled Baseball Epic, Famous and Forgotten Lives of the Dead Ball Era. Have a question about the dead ball era of Major League Baseball? Interested in baseball history? What's the game meant to you? Share your story at 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Jason, let's talk about some of the people you feature. One of them is Branch Rickey, who is best known for signing Jackie Robinson to the Brooklyn Dodgers. Talk to us about what you share about Rickey.
Well, so he actually had a very long career in baseball, going back to the turn of the century. And obviously, Jackie Robinson was signed in 1946, so it's pretty much half the century right there. And most of his roles in baseball had been sort of a management sort. But he, the thing I highlight in his bio is that when he was managing his college baseball team, there was actually a black player on the team, because this was before before segregation had become in the game itself had become quite so solidified. But whenever they would go around the country, that player was always singled out as having to use separate facilities. And it bothered Branch Rickey so much that he promised that player that he would do everything he could in baseball to try and change things. It took him 50 years, but eventually he was the first manager to sign a black player to the major leagues.
And you include a few interesting bits about Frank Corradin, who was he was a pitcher during the dead ball era. But more than that, tell us about Frank's many talents.
So, well, he also played violin, there's not a ton of information about him out there. But his nickname on the field was Fiddler. They called him Fiddler Corradin, and there's some sources say that he played in the symphony orchestra in his free time, but he also apparently between games in towns, he would go down to the local park and just busk. He would play for money just on the corner. So I wish there was more information, because that's such an intriguing tidbit, but I poured through a lot of newspaper records and I haven't been able to find a more detailed explanation of his violin talents.
Let's take a call. John is with us from Boaz. John, good morning.
Go Brewers.
Amen to that, brother.
What's your question for our guest? We got one game away from the World Series, and it put baseball back on the map. And I just want to thank you for your program. I have want to say about Babe Ruth and Joe DiMaggio and Henry Aaron. Babe Ruth was larger than life, and Joe DiMaggio went all the way to Hollywood. And Henry Aaron showed that African Americans can be just as good, if not better. A great inspiration for the kids and the youth.
John, thanks. Thanks for your call. You mentioned Babe Ruth earlier, Jason. What about Joe DiMaggio and Hammer and Hank?
Well, actually, I was born in the same town as Joe DiMaggio, Martinez, California. So, in the just downtown, you can see they still have the sign up DiMaggio's grocery store. So I feel sort of a personal connection to him, for sure.
You, one of the other players that you draw is Charles Albert Bender, more commonly called Chief Bender. He was a Native American pitcher for a Philadelphia team. Tell us his story.
Yeah, he actually had kind of a long career in baseball as a player. I think he played for over 20 years, mostly with the Philadelphia Athletics, which, of course, now by being in Oakland, we have the Athletics here. So there's that kind of feel. I have a soft spot for him in that respect. But he was one of the few high-profile Native American players in the major leagues at that time. But it wasn't easy. When he would play a game, he would get a lot of taunting from the people in the bleachers about his background. They would do war whoops and fling insults at him. But he was such a good player that if his team won at the end of the game, he would run around the perimeter of the field and just shout at the bleachers, "Foreigners, foreigners." He was definitely a very proud of his background.
The when you were researching Albert Bender, what were some of the other things you found out about him, and what was the connection to your own family's experience?
Yeah, so my great grandfather kind of had a lot of parallels with him. He had mixed European and Native American parents, and unfortunately, the environment he grew up in he was encouraged not to discuss his heritage. And it was something that the family, it was kind of, even when I was a kid and some of his siblings were still alive, it was kind of the elephant in the room. It wasn't something that we were really supposed to talk about. And I wish I could go back and inhabit that child I was then, because I feel like I would have had more license to ask the questions that the adults around me were afraid to ask, so that I could get a better read on what that experience was like for them. But what I take away from my family's experience is a kind of reticence that just wasn't there for Chief Bender, because he had to take ownership because he was in the spotlight, and there was no denying that he had a certain kind of background. So he was very proud of it, and I think that that's pretty inspiring, considering especially the time when a lot of Native Americans didn't have even basic things like citizenship. So.
Jason Novak is an Oakland-based cartoonist, and he's the author and illustrator of Baseball Epic, Famous and Forgotten Lives of the Dead Ball Era, a book of microbiographies of the men and women who shaped the game. Jackie Robinson, of course, we talked about earlier in connection with Branch Rickey, broke the Major League Baseball color barrier. But years before he came into the league, a few players at least tried to take the first steps toward that goal. Tell us about John Donaldson and how he trailblazed for players of color.
Yeah, so he was a star in his own right as a player. And in the book, I call them the Negro Leagues because that's how what they were called beginning around 1920, when the black players started to form official leagues. But before that, you would almost call them pre-league teams, but they were all black teams. So as a shorthand, I say Negro Leagues, even though technically a historian might say, well, you know, we wouldn't have called them that until a little bit later. But anyway, he was a star in at that time to the magnitude that even when he was barnstorming throughout the country, white fans would come out and watch him in droves because his celebrity was of that magnitude. So he had a lot of clout as a player. Beyond that, he was so good that this actually requires some background. After the Spanish-American War, when the U.S. briefly acquired Cuba, the major leagues started sending teams down to Havana to play the local talent there, because baseball was also starting to get big in Cuba. And it turns out that the players there were phenomenal, and the major leagues from the U.S. were losing games, and it made the managers thirsty for the talent down there. But the major difference between Cuba and the United States was that there wasn't nearly the color line. So the teams there were what you might have called at the time mixed teams. And the managers were always trying to scheme, how can we basically whitewash this Cuban player and get him onto a major league team? And they tried in several instances. They were successful in doing that. But in the case of John Donaldson, there was a manager for the New York Giants, I believe it was. John McGraw, who tried to encourage him to play for the major leagues, disguised as a Cuban, basically. And John Donaldson wouldn't have any of it. He said, I'm proud of my background. I don't want to pretend to be something that I'm not. He did ultimately end up working as a scout for the major leagues. But his efforts to try and sign black players always came to nothing. And as a result, he resigned to that position in frustration. So he was definitely a champion of his background.
We're almost out of time, but I wanted to get to a player in your book with a Wisconsin connection. One of the players you feature is Cy Williams, who retired to Wisconsin after his baseball career quickly. What was it that he was known for after baseball?
Well, he was an architect, and he was kind of a peculiar architect at that. He, I guess, he specialized in doing buildings that had a kind of a theme. So he would do clubhouses and resorts and things like that. So I know in one case he did a boating club building that looked like a ship. And in another case, he did a sort of a resort building that looked like a medieval German castle. So that was kind of interesting. And I was trying to think, maybe it was the skill that you use in baseball and architecture is that sense of space.
Yeah.
So I like to think that he learned that playing baseball.
Well, this is a fascinating book. Jason Novak, thank you for joining us. Appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you very much.
Jason Novak, Oakland-based cartoonist. His work has appeared in The New Yorker, Harper's Magazine, and more. He's the author and illustrator of Baseball Epic. Coming up next, one Wisconsin school district is tracking students and buses through a GPS system. John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent on The Morning Show.